You're listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show, helping you transform your deepest fears into your greatest strengths. Here's your host, Keith Blakemore Noble.
Hello. Welcome back. Lovely to have you here once again. And it's lovely to have my guest, Caroline. My guest, Caroline Bramwell, is originally from Beaconsfield in Buckinghamshire. She and her husband moved to North Devon in 2004 to enjoy a better work-life balance on the coast. Beautiful. A wife and a mother who had been running her own successful PR and marketing company for 28 years, always good until, there's always an until, isn't there? Until Caroline was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, which is an inflammatory bowel disease. She was diagnosed with this when she was pregnant with her second child. A yo-yo regime of medication ensued for the next 4 years to try and get the disease under control. Now, at times, Caroline couldn't be more than a couple of feet away from a toilet, such as the urgency to use the loo with this debilitating disease. And I'm sure you can imagine just how much of a massive impact that would have on life. Racked with pain, anemic and fatigued, all whilst raising two small children, inevitably the business started to suffer. Employees were let go, and Caroline had to confront surgery as a realistic option. At its worst, Caroline was hospitalized for a week for intravenous steroids and needed two blood transfusions. She rarely left the house. Business was failing. Bloated and overweight from medication and having no quality of life with her family, Caroline decided to have her entire large intestine and bowel removed and to live with a permanent ileostomy. After surgery in March of 2009, Caroline was determined to enjoy life to the max, to shed the weight. A self-confessed couch potato, she signed up to cycle London to Paris in 24 hours for charity as her motivation to train regularly. Despite suffering from osteoarthritis from steroids, Caroline was determined to take back control of her life and to prove that having stoma surgery and living with a stoma bag is not an end, but is in fact a new beginning. She rode into Paris in July 2010 in 24 hours. Another 24-hour cycle ride 2 years later, Caroline decided she had to overcome her fear of water so that she could make up for all those lost years with her kids when they were small and when she was ill. And this led to the idea of doing a triathlon. This is a lady who does not do things by halves. From doing a little local sprint triathlon, Caroline has continued to push the boundaries of her body and is an advocate for people with an ileostomy. She trains up to 6 days a week, competes in half and full Ironman triathlons, 2.4 mile open water swim, 112 mile bike ride, and 26.2 mile run. What? She, approached by a publisher, her autobiography is Lou Rolls to Lycra, the Ironman dreams of an IBD sufferer. And it was published in January of 2018. And Caroline is now an international speaker. She is the UK's number one inspirational ostomy triathlete, Caroline Bramwell. Hello, Caroline. How are you?
Hello. I'm good. I'm really good. Thank you.
Brilliant. Great to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us. We've heard a little bit about you and a little bit about what you've gone through. We're going to explore that in a bit more detail. But just before we do that, who is Caroline?
Oh, yeah. The real Caroline, I suppose, let's be honest, she's still a couch potato. My inner couch potato is still in there. I'm a mum. I run my PR business. I'm now speaking. But at the heart, I'm just somebody who has found a way to inspire other people. And I've sort of found my passion in life, which is helping others. But it's amazing that you have to go through such hard times to sort of find that real you. But yeah, coming out the other side, I think I'm comfortable with myself and the fact that, what I do, whether doing work for clients, doing their PR and marketing. Most of it, I'm helping. And I think that's the real me.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Now, I know that the main thing we want to talk about today is fear of surgery, because that was, I mean, let's not underestimate this. That was a pretty major piece of surgery that you had to go through.
Yeah.
And what was life like that led you to have to decide that surgery was going to be a better option?
It's funny. I look back and you sort of reflect and think a bit on it in the past. At the time, I was just living day to day with such a horrendous disease, which was so debilitating. All you could do was get through that day. I mean, for me, the day would be, I'm in the house, as you were saying, 2 foot from a toilet, because you never know when an attack might come on. I might have to dash to. But you can't live. That's not living. That's not a life. I mean, I had small children at that point because I'd got Robert, who was nearly 2 when I had Natasha. So I've got 2 little ones and then this awful disease. My husband was doing pretty much everything in the house. He was sort of running around after the kids. He was making the meals. There was little I could do. I mean, I could do it, but at any second I'd have to drop everything and disappear. Number of times I went to go shopping and I'd go, no, I can't go. And he ended up doing everything, all the household stuff, going out to the shops, because I just physically couldn't go, and it just got worse. And the medication is steroids, because it's an autoimmune disorder. Your body thinks you're a virus, so it's attacking you.
Right.
So the only way to stop it was to put steroids in to suppress that immune disorder. But of course, steroids are nasty, really nasty. By the end, I was on the highest possible dose, because it was constantly trying to raise them to get it under control and then bring it back under mission, as it were. But of course, the moment we got to a certain level, it would kick off again. You have to up the doses. So this is why the yo-yo effect of medication. But one of bloated, overweight, from looking in the mirror. I couldn't actually look in the mirror. I would cry if I saw myself. Very few photos of me around that period, because I was so overweight. And this is the effect of the steroids. Yeah. You know, you get this typical moon face and just unrecognizable. And yeah, I suppose becoming quite a recluse, because I wanted to be, but reclusive because I physically couldn't go out. The impact on my business was, it was imploding, because I'm the front man for the business. I'm the one going out, picking up the new clients, but I couldn't go to meetings. I had one occasion at a client meeting and I disappeared for half an hour.
Yeah.
And they're worried what's happened to me, but it's because I'm struggling with the colitis. And at that point, we decided I couldn't go and win any new clients, and I had to just get on with looking after the ones we had. A lot of what I do is electronic. You know, it's a lot of email, phone calls. I don't need to see people face to face. So much is electronic. So I just looked after the clients we had, and I could do that from home. So I ended up losing my staff because I could bring in no more work. So I had to let my staff go. Mm-hmm. The disease wasn't just on me physically and that on my family, but it was impacting, which then knock on was on the family, because that meant less income. So it was a battle on so many levels. And you know, we just struggle from day to day with coping with the illness, 2 children, etc. But it was a rare treat for us to go out. I had to manage my day, because if I had any stress in my day, it could make my condition worse. So I would have a day where I'd be completely relaxed, really chilled, don't eat too much because I'd worry that the food was going to set something off again. And my husband and I went to the cinema. Great, I managed to get through the movie, but on the way back to the car, I got hit by a flare.
Yeah.
But believe me, with a condition like this, you have no time to find a pub or a shop or anything open. You literally have to find the nearest hiding space. And that was horrendous. I mean, for me, it would become, dare I say, kind of normal when I was out. I would constantly be looking for walls, bushes, trees. I'd be on alert on every
just
trip out.
Case.
But my husband had never seen that. So when that hit me, I'm like, oh my God. And he thought we ought to install a port-a-loo in the car. And that point, that conversation was when I went, no, I'm not. I cannot live my life around a port-a-loo in the back of the car.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I didn't do life at that point at all. And I just thought, I've got to do something different. And I'd feared the suggestion of surgery that my consultant had mentioned previously. You know, you just like, no, I don't want to know. I don't want to know. I can cope with it. I can do things differently. But, you know, when it gets to the point where you can't leave your house, you have to consider things that you may never normally want to consider.
Got it. So when your consultant first suggested surgery, what was kind of going through your mind? What was it that made you go, you know what, I'd rather have this than go through surgery? So what was originally going through your mind there?
At the time when he said it, I think it's denial. It's denial that you've got this disease, that you've got this condition that you can't control. You know, I'm a confident individual. You know, I control, I've been running my own business for 27 years. So to suddenly have something that was taking over was really hard to accept. And I would see my consultant on a regular basis and I would go in saying, well, I'm going to go wheat free. I'm going to go gluten free. I'm going to try dairy free. He would say, it makes no difference. And I was confident it would. And I did every fad going.
Yeah.
Thinking, I've got this, I can control this. There is an answer to this that is not surgery. So I would just smile that I needed to have surgery. And I was going off trying every other thing I could imagine to try it out. Yes, they have varying degrees on the condition, but it wouldn't cure it.
Yeah.
I think I was just trying to control it. So my fear was that I don't want surgery.
Yeah. So eventually things reached the point where you decided enough was enough and you had to go down the route of surgery, which is something you'd previously always said no to. You now reached the point where you decided, I have to do this because life is just rubbish otherwise.
Yeah.
Then what was kind of going through your mind then? So now you're going, right, I have to have this surgery. Now, Douglas, what's going through your mind now at this point?
Well, I remember the day going in to see the consultant, and it was after I'd had this terrible night, and my husband and I had sat and discussed it first. And without being too graphic, you know, the options were not good. And he just said to me, my husband said, you know, what life do you want? Do you want to live like this for the rest of your life? And I went, no, I don't, not for any of us. And I went in to see my consultant and I said, I want to discuss the surgery options. Again, I wasn't accepting it, but I was open to discuss it in more, I suppose, in a way where I was a little more open to hearing it. And once he said to me, yes, I think you've made the right decision, I knew a long time ago you needed surgery, but you needed to be ready for it. And he said, you've come to me now and I know it's the right choice. So my consultant kind of was letting me come to the decision myself so that I was more accepting of what I was going to have to go through, because it will change your life. So, but my fear was it was going to change it negatively.
So what
coming out the other side, it's a completely different story.
And so what did your fear tell you was going to happen then?
My fear was that I was going to have to live with this bag stuck on my body. I'd have to wear big baggy clothes all my life. I'd never wear And I just thought I'd be smelly. You know, you've got a bag on your body. And I say this because I now talk to people who have this exact fear. And I had all the stop me doing things. And I had to, I was given some sample bags to stick on my body so I could look at myself with it and get used to the psychologically looking at myself with this on my body. Mm-hmm. And that, again, was very, very tearful because it was like, I've stuck it on me, cry, oh my God, why have I got this? Why have I got this? But then the more I did it, I thought, but think after I've got this, I can leave the house. You know, and those were the things. I was thinking what this could do for me. Also knowing life wasn't going to get any better if I didn't do something about it.
Yeah.
Tried everything I could. This was the ultimate thing I had to do, even though it was not my choice, really. I didn't want it. Why would anybody want it? But actually, it was going to be the best choice I could make.
Got it. So I guess... the things that led you to be able to decide, yes, let's go down this scary route of surgery, were that you had to be mentally ready for it. There was nobody else could kind of make the decision for you.
Absolutely.
And it was kind of weighing up the balances. Well, yes, surgery, it's a scary thing, but once I've got through this, the benefits afterwards have now reached the point where it's enough to make it worth facing this terrifying thought.
And I've come to the conclusion that I was going to have, you've got the added question that you're given by the surgeon, which, do you want it or temporary? Now, a temporary stoma is where you have the option to have it reversed later on,
right?
And they reconnect you, basically the bad bit, and if you want, you can get reconnected. They just replumb you internally.
Yeah.
But that would mean two more surgeries further down the line. Mm-hmm. No guarantee that it would even cure the problem. Mm-hmm. So my colitis was right to the very, very last part of the bowel, right down to the rectum. And to leave it for a reversal, I would have still had colitis in that last section.
Oh, God.
So to me, I thought, what would be the point of going through surgery and still having it?
Yeah.
So I thought, sod it, do it. So it took away the dilemmas in the future. I knew I wanted quality of life. I didn't want to go through two more surgeries after this one. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to still have the disease even after surgery. My top priority was quality of life, spending it with my kids and my family. So that was my deciding factor. And I just said to them, no, make it permanent. And you still got the, oh, but if you might want to, and I went, no, I want quality of life now.
Yeah.
So I want the whole lot done now. So I had what's called a panproctocolectomy, which is the whole of the large intestine and everything removed and sewn up.
Got it.
So no going back, but no regrets.
And that's a key thing, as you say, no regrets, because for your situation, it was absolutely the right decision to make.
Yeah, so, yeah, definitely.
So you come to the weeks leading up to surgery, and then you come to the day of the surgery. Kind of what's going through your mind now at this point?
Oh, I think up to that point, just even driving up to the hospital, mine was Bristol at Booth Hospital up there. And it was a nice environment. I'd met my surgeon, and I'd had a blood transfusion up there as well, so I knew the environment. So it was an okay, but like I felt like I was going into a hotel. You know, it was, again, my brain wasn't accepting what's about to happen.
Yeah.
And I look at photos. There is a classic photo of me that I do use, and it's taken outside that hospital with my two children on my lap. And that is the morning of my surgery, or the morning I went into the hospital. You wouldn't recognise me to the person I am today. But I remember going in there for that in Bristol. It's going to be a few hours. It's a 3 to 4 hour surgery. So my husband and his sister took the kids off to the zoo. They took them off to Bristol Zoo to the music. You know, they were a day in having surgery. And I just remember suddenly feeling alone. And that was the fear. I'd met my consultant, the anaesthetist. Everyone was lovely. All the professionals were absolutely lovely and doing their best to, you know, reassure you. But I knew I was on my own because they'd all gone off for the day. I didn't want them to be sitting around in a, you know, corridor worrying. So best thing to do with two small children, take them out to a zoo. And I think that was my worst point. I was fine, even robed up. I was not too bad. Yes, the old anxiety was kicking in. But it was really those last moments getting onto that trolley. And I just burst into tears. And they were just so sweet. The people around me were so reassuring. But it was just pure fear. Absolute fear kicked in that I wasn't going to ever wake up again. And that's what gets me. And that's what got me then. It chokes me up now even. But you have to put your trust in the professionals. And I had no other choice. I could have said no at that point and walked away. But I know nothing was going to change. I had to overcome that absolute phobia. I suppose it was like a phobia. Overcome the fear and trust these people are going to do the job they're qualified for. And that's what they did. And of course, to me, it was like that. 1 minute you're out, next minute you're awake. And it was like, oh, right, okay. And just waking up. You know, it's odd. Anesthetic's weird.
It is. Yeah. So you're in the situation where you had this strong fear that you weren't going to make it through.
Yeah.
But what ultimately was it? Do you think that enabled you to go, I have to face this. I have to go through it, even though I'm scared I might not make it through it. I have to go through it because. What was it that got you through that, do you think, and enabled you?
It's always family. Always been my family. My children, set me off now. Yeah, it's always my children.
Yeah.
The children needed me to be mum. So it was like, this is the opportunity. I didn't actually think it at the time, but had I not come through it, then life wouldn't have changed. I'd have still been very sick, and who knows where I could have ended up. It could have been worse.
Yeah.
So really, throw the dice, roll the dice, as some people say. And I rolled the dice. I trusted the professionals. And it didn't matter how scared I was. I had to do it. I had to give it my best shot. So because life was never going to change if I didn't. So it was for the kids and the family.
Beautiful. And that's what got you through. And
yeah.
I mean, we're just about out of time with this, but we've heard a wee snippet of what life's like for you, with triathlons and Ironman and all this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Very, very briefly, what kind of, how quickly were you able to adapt to living with this, with the stoma, and to embracing life again?
Honest, I was told the moment I woke up from the anaesthetic, I was grinning from ear to ear. I was so happy. I'd got a bag. The anaesthetist came in my room, took away all the drugs that I'd had, and I was on 16 tablets a day. He Wow. took everything away and went, you don't need these. You're fixed. And that was a bit of a mind messer, because 1 minute you're ill, next minute you're fixed.
Yeah.
But I was changing my own bag within 24 hours, self-caring. I was discharged within 2 days. And I walked out of there so happy. And that's where, you know, the rest of it, I say, is history. I just focused on getting fit, getting well, and focusing on some sport to make myself lose the weight. It was just a whole new focus, a whole new me. It's like being reborn, I suppose.
A beautiful way of putting it. And obviously you still had major obstacles to overcome there. You've yeah. got through them all very, very successfully. What would you say is the one key that to for anyone who is facing a major obstacle of any sort, what's the one key to help you get through them, tackle it?
I think the big thing is to talk to others who've been through it. It's connecting with people who've been there. I didn't know, so I didn't have anyone to ask. Now I'm an advocate. I talk openly to anybody who's got that fear, whether it's not just my kind of surgery, but any fear. You know, I'm somebody who's been through the mill, and I'm here to support others. So to me, I would highly recommend connect with an association, charity to the particular condition, and talk to others who've been there and been through it. You get a lot of negatives on the social media, but there's some millions of positive stories out there.
Brilliant. And if anybody has been inspired by you and your journey and wants to find out a bit more about you, maybe connect with you and so on, what's the best way for them to get in touch or find out more about you?
Yeah, the easiest way would be connect to me through my website, which is carolinebramwell.co.uk. That's probably the easiest point, really. Contact me through that website, and I can always point you off to other people if you want me to refer you to any charities and stuff. I'm more than happy to do that.
Brilliant. So that's Caroline's website, carolinebramwell.co.uk. You can find out more about Caroline, connect with her there. And she says she'll be able to help put you in touch with the right sort of people. Obviously, Caroline's also everywhere on social media. As always, you can find all of her links plus her bio and more information on the show, the page for the show, keithblakemorenoble.com/show. You'll see this episode there. You can listen to it again, watch it again, catch Caroline's bio, catch all of her social media links, get it all there. And if you want to get in touch with Caroline directly, carolinebramwell.co.uk. Caroline, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy, hectic schedule for us to have this chat. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. Thank you so much, Caroline.
You're very welcome. Delighted to be on and to help others.
Beautiful. So what's next? Any more Ironman challenges coming up, or are you going to take it a step further, or what's going on?
Well, Ironman is the toughest Ironman. It's before you go to ultra. But having done a lot this year, this is now the end of the season, so I'm taking a bit of rest time, fun events for the time being, and then start to look at my calendar for next year. So this time of year is me starting to wind it back a little bit and just do some fun triathlons.
Fun triathlons. I like that. Beautiful. Well, again, Caroline, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck with them all, with all your triathlons and with everything else that you do. And again, if anyone wants to get in touch with Caroline, carolinebramwell.co.uk, or you'll find all of her social media links on the show page at the usual place, keithblakemorenoble.com/show. That really is it for this week. Thank you to my fabulous guest, Caroline Bramwell. Thank you, dear viewer and listener, for joining us. And as always, I'm going to leave you with my guest's favorite quote: anything is possible.
You've been listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show, helping you transform your deepest fears into your greatest strengths. To find out more, please visit keithblakemorenoble.com.